Special co-host, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Yes, we are on this final Friday of 2011. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, good morning, sir.
Good morning. You ready
New
for
Year?
New Year's Eve?
Absolutely so. I will not be in Times Square, however, and some of their estimates are rather extraordinary. They think the warm weather will draw them.
People are happy. We're going to have a record number of tourists, something like 50.2 million this year. Great for the economy and good for the future because those people go home, and if they had a great experience, they tell their friends that it was great. And then that means you're going to have more tourists down the road. People want to move here, go to school here, get medical care here, start businesses here. But for New Year's Eve, you know, the weather's supposed to be great. Lady Gaga's...
Yeah, you and Lady Gaga. Now, there is a team, ladies and gentlemen.
Who knew?
Who knew?
I saw her perform once at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. She is quite a performer.
She is. And, she's the biggest one around.
New York young lady. And seems to be, you know, she goes on and on and on to, from success to success. So.
And speaking of going on and on and on, Dick Clark will be back again in Times Square.
How old is Dick Clark?
I have no idea. He's got to be in his 70s. He was about the age of my father, so he must be about 72 or 3, I think.
I don't know how to break this to you, but for you and me, that is not very old.
I understand.
We're not very far away from that.
And another year right around the corner here.
Well, I always hope to get to another year. My great objective is to make my next birthday, and then I sort of set a new objective of one
next,
year later.
The next one,
take
right?
It one at a time.
Absolutely. So let's see here. Where do we start? There's a lot to talk about here. 9-11. Let's start with the memorial and the problem you've got with the Port Authority.
The Port Authority claims that the Memorial Foundation that I'm the chairman of owes them, I think it's $165 million. We say absolutely not. It's well documented that they agreed to pick up the expenses for that infrastructure that they're talking about. And in fact, we claim that they owe us something like $140 million because of being late, and then we have extra penalties. You know, I assume it'll get worked out. Bob Steele is working on it with the Port Authority staff. They've got a new executive director, and they've got a reasonably new 1 year, I guess, into his term, chairman, and they've got their budget problems, and, you know, listen.
I'm assuming they have the same pieces of paper that you have when it comes to contractual obligations.
You would assume so. But, you know, we're reasonably confident, or very confident.
How far do you think it's going to push the opening of the museum?
No idea. I mean, you know, if you don't do anything for 6 months, it pushes it for roughly 6 months, maybe a little more, a little less. If the economy improves, it hurts because contracting when the economy's better and construction's better costs more than you'd like to build things when everybody says, oh, I'm not going to build anything. That's when you can get a better deal. And the progress up until we had to stop was on schedule, on budget, on time. And it would be, you know, it's a shame if we don't get it done reasonably quickly. There's nothing magical about the September 11th of 2012 other than people would like to go. The most important date was this past September 11th, the 10th year anniversary. We made that. And Joe Daniels, the head of the Memorial Foundation, the executive director or president, whatever his title
is. I'm going to be speaking with him in an hour.
A million visitors so far in three months. So
and well good. Organized. I've been there once. In fact, my family is coming in today, and we got a whole crowd that are going to go over to the 9/11 Memorial because it really is something special.
Yeah.
Very well organized.
And difficult to do. That organization, we had a big staff at City Hall who worked very hard on getting it ready for really day one wasn't the problem. It was day two, as we called it, because from then on, there's construction on three sides. There's a big superhighway on the fourth side. You have all sorts of building going on, and so trucks that are coming by, you have to make sure people are safe. You have to make sure nothing falls out of a building, so there's some places where you don't want to get them too close to the edge.
Because it is a construction zone.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. One corner of it is not finished yet because they're doing all the work underneath for, I think that's probably for the Calatrava Port Authority path station, which is going to be great. the essence of the memorial is done, was done on time, and I think it's a chance for people to realize the terrible loss that took place there and to learn the lesson that we just cannot let our guard down. We're always under attack and threats of attack, and that's why the PD has, NYPD has 1,000 police officers dedicated to intelligence and counterterrorism. We think we've stopped 13-odd potential attacks, and who knows how many more. The better your defenses are and the more obvious they are, deflect or convince people don't even try, and that's exactly what you'd like to do. It'd be wonderful if the police and the fire department, too, never had to go, that everything they did was prevention. I call them the first preventers as much as the first responders.
You're going to be leaving early today because you have your interfaith breakfast coming up here, and I think it's 15 Muslim leaders have said they're not going to be attending.
Yeah, not all of those leaders, I think, were invited. Some of them just weren't on the list. You can't invite everybody. Look, I hope everybody comes. The PD is doing the best job of any police department in the country. We don't target any ethnic groups. I thought some of the reporting about it is just not accurate or even really responsible. We go where the potential threats are reported to be. It's like saying you're going after, people that are my height with brown hair. If the perp is described that way in the neighborhood, you look everybody in the neighborhood that's got brown hair and my height, you stop them. We have great race relations here. Communities, whether they're Muslim or Jewish or Christian or Hindu or Buddhist or whatever, all contribute to the city. We don't target any one of them. We don't target any neighborhood. But where you have reports of crime, reports of a threat, the police department goes, and that's what they should do. And that's going to keep everybody safe. It keeps people safe of all religions. So, I think we'll have a nice breakfast every year. It's a breakfast that pulls people together. This one will do the same thing.
All right, why don't I take a break right here, Mr. Mayor? We'll come right back. When we do, we can... It's John's iPod of Bumper Music Friday on this last Friday of 2011. That's Mark Cohen and walking in Memphis. We're walking through New York City with Mayor Michael Bloomberg as we do each and every Friday. You had some good stats this week.
They're all summed up. Lower crime, lower deaths by fire, fewer traffic deaths. In fire and certainly in traffic, it's back to lower than when we started keeping records. In 1910, when horse-drawn fire engines and, traffic accidents meant the horse and the truck and the car it pulled with metal wheels ran you down. My mother used to tell a story when she came into New York City from Jersey City, where she lived in the summer. We talk about the air being filthy today. In those days, in the summer, the horse manure got ground up by the metal wheels, and she said there'd be a cloud over the streets. You couldn't see across the streets.
A million horses.
Oh, yeah.
Million.
But anyways, today, all of those things are better. We have the third best year in homicides, meaning lowest, and very close to what the best and the second best was within a dozen or so, two dozen. But it's all summed up in life expectancy. And life expectancy in New York City for a baby born today is something like 2.5 years better than it was 10 years ago. And it's 2.5 years better than the national average. And you think about that. If I told you 10 years ago that New York City would be safer than the country, you'd say, well, there's crime, there's pollution, there's traffic, there's fire, there's this. And every one of these things we've worked on, the public's cooperated and worked on it. It's the public that stopped smoking, not the city that stopped smoking. We make it difficult for you to smoke, but you're the one that has to make the decision. All of that has led that. And then if you, for example, if you are a baby born today, you on average are going to live 80.6 years.
Which puts you at almost 2,100.
If medicine keeps improving the way it's done for the last 4 or 5 decades, 50% of the babies born today will live to 100. because these numbers assume medicine doesn't get any better. But in fact, it has been, and hopefully will continue to do it. It's also true that these numbers assume include everybody. It's an average. So if you get older, for example, life expectancy goes away. If you're a 40-year-old today, you have a higher life expectancy than a baby born today. You're going to live, if you're 40 years old, you live to 82 on average, which is another 42 years from now. Why? Because infant mortality is taken out of those numbers. It's people that have made 40 and looking forward for them. But babies today could easily live to be 100 years old, half of them.
You know, that's a wonderful thing for the individual, but for the group, it creates enormous pressure.
Well,
and problems.
Your pension system and healthcare system is just not designed for this. If you go back, when Social Security was started, life expectancy was, I looked at the numbers.
It was in the 60s, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it was, they set an age that on average very few people would make. That was the whole idea. You had something like 30-odd people putting money in for everyone taking it out. Today we have 3 putting in for everyone taking it out. And nobody lived, and a small percentage of people lived to the age where it started to pay. Today,
everybody does.
Not very, but a big chunk of them, more than half, get over that age. And then I looked for somebody in their 70s, because that's, I mean, very selfish, I want to know. And my life expectancy is 86 or 87, another 16 or 17 years. But if medicine keeps improving, and that includes people who aren't taking care of themselves. So if you take care of yourselves, you can do even better than that on average. And it doesn't guarantee tomorrow you're not going to walk outside and get hit by a meteor, but it does say that on average, if you want to live longer, move to New York. If you want to live longer, look before you cross the street. Don't smoke. All of those things are included in it. And it's fascinating. If you go back and look in the 90s, there was a spike in deaths. Or a decline in life expectancy, if you want to look at the other side of that. And it all, the big chunk of it was AIDS. 90 to 95, enormous number of people died of AIDS. 95 to 2000, medicine really came through with some real breakthrough drugs so that people didn't die anywhere near as much. It's still tragic disease. It still kills people. Don't get AIDS. But the bottom line is,
Did behavior change after that?
We work hard to change people's behavior, protected sex and things like that.
But you think it's more medicine than probably behavior?
Well, a needle exchanges, all these things help, but medicine, and that's part of it. No argument about that. But the bottom line is that we've got to keep going. If you smoking, a big deal, bringing deaths down, fire, traffic, murders, those things all help. There's a lot of things, these little things that people say, oh, what's the difference? It does make a difference. It all adds up.
Of all the things that have taken place in 2011, is there one that jumps to the top of the list for you? I'm talking about the occupiers, the economy.
Maybe it's life expectancy is one number. Number two, the number of percentage of people that the safety net doesn't take care of. How are we going to find a safety net? The number of people sleeping on the streets keeps going down. Advocates will say, oh, it's terrible. The economy's terrible. Those things are true. But the number of people have gone down. We are, New York, as a compassionate society, does a better job of taking care of the less fortunate than virtually any other city. We are safer by far than virtually any other city in America. We are more attractive to outsiders, more diverse. Tourist numbers show that. 50.2 million tourists this year. And you take a look. I think if you look at the training and the equipment for fire and police and all of the health, all these agencies, the stage is set to continue the gains. You can always have tragedies and crazy people doing bad things, but we are better prepared for it than ever before. We're better prepared for preventing, and we're better prepared for responding. I just looked at some of the technology we have where we can track where equipment is around the city, and there's a lot of these things we've done.
What did the hurricane teach you? Along the lines you're speaking of now.
The cooperation between the city agencies and the state agency mainly involved was the MTA, was infinitely better than it's ever been, I think, and hopefully tomorrow will be better than today and that sort of thing. But it's that you never know what the next problem is going to be. The next problem is going to occur in a different time, different place, different manner than you ever thought about. So you can't train for every eventuality. What you can do is make sure that people know how to work together, share information, cover for each other. You can deploy your resources. When you see, going through the city, I always loved it, you'll see 50 police cars all together, lights going.
You see them down here all the time.
Right. Yeah. What are they doing? They're training. What happens if you have to get police to one place quickly? Well, you got to transport them. They've got to figure out how to get over the bridges and through the tunnels and to Mary's house we go. And that's what they keep doing, keep training. Is it expensive? Yes. Is it worth it? Yes. And, you know, you just, you'll never know whether you're doing enough or you'll never know whether you did too much. But if something happens and you
along those lines, in retrospect, shutting the MTA down during the storm, good idea?
There's no right answer. A lot of people used mass transit to get home. We want people to not drive their cars. Then you got to have mass transit. You know, I mean, it's easy. Well, let's close mass transit. Okay, so now you got a bunch of people who are away for the holiday, coming back. Where do they go? How do they go? You can't just leave them in their cars. That would be so. There's if there were simple solutions to any of these. In retrospect, yes, they should not have kept driving while they were getting stuck. By the time
you're talking about the snowstorm, I was talking about the hurricane.
The same thing. I mean, you know, there's you can't have it both ways.
I'm sure you did.
But I will say this. I think the MTA, look, I take the subway, so I'm not an expert on buses. I can just tell you, subway is phenomenally well run. It's so much better than when I came here. When I came here, everything was covered with graffiti. There was crime. They broke
crashes
down all the time. Crashes. There's no air conditioning, that sort of thing. There's trash all over the place. Today, if I walk down the platform and I see a piece of paper, I pick it up. I hope other people do, too. This is our home because this is where we live. But the bottom line is it works. And, you know, they've got a new guy running it, Joe Loda, who has got a lot of experience in the city, worked for Giuliani, ran, I think he was Giuliani's deputy mayor for operations or the equivalent thereof. So he really ran a big part of the city for Rudy, and he certainly knows what he's doing. Is he going to make the right decisions all the time? No, of course not. You can always second-guess him on everything. Keep the buses running, don't keep the buses running. But he's got the guts to make decisions. And that's more important. And Jay Walder, who came before him, had the guts to make decisions.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang tight. Let me take a fast break right here. 8:31. We'll do some news and a couple of...
While you're doing the commercials, we talked about HIV and drugs bringing down. It's also early testing. Like cancer, HIV, any of these things, you should get as you get older. Colonoscopy. Women should make sure breast cancer is a very dangerous form of cancer. You know, talk to their doctor. HIV, there's a program in the Bronx called the Bronx Knows, and it's just a chance for people to get tested to know their status. There's Brooklyn Knows is another one. The Health and Hospitals Corporation, which really is like 11 hospitals in the city.
And you can call 311 to find out where these are.
Yeah, I mean, and just find out, because if you know, no matter what your problem is, it's easier for medicine to treat you the earlier you start. A lot of these cancers are literally curable if you start very early. Some have resisted and any real progress or big progress so far. But HIV, one of the reasons it's down is that.
While we're talking about health, what's the latest on the Emblem Health for-profit switch?
Emblem is a combination of companies that is private. It is there's a movement to take it public that would give the state, I think the state gets 90% of, by the law, of the monies from selling it. There's a trust fund set up for health care in the city. They get 10%. New York City is far and away the biggest customer of Emblem. And a little while ago, we put out what we call a request for information. to see if there are other companies out there that might want the city's health insurance business. Turns out there is a lot of interest, and it's good to know that if we sent out a request for proposals at any point, we would probably get a lot of response back. But what we decided to do is to tell the insurers that we're going to wait and work with the state to see if they can bring any viable bidders to the table as part of a privatization thing. See, if the state wants to sell it, we just want to be sure that our costs don't go up. That if it's a separate company, a for-profit company, they don't raise the city's health care costs. We can't really afford that. But I've said, and the governor and I have talked about this, and our staffs are working on it, that you know, if we could find some ways to protect the city for a while, then we would not certainly wouldn't stand in the way. In fact, we'd be helpful in getting the deal done. Keep in mind, we want the state to find revenues, because if the state doesn't find revenues,
You don't fund revenues.
We send all the 60% of the money up there, and we only get 40% back, or whatever the numbers are, and we certainly don't get back as much as we send up. And so we have an interest in helping the state. We also have to protect at a different level our costs. So we're going to wait and keep working with the governor's office, and you know, who knows? I'm optimistic that we can come to an agreement.
All right, earlier,
we're certainly working together.
Earlier this week, New York Education Commissioner John King was pretty direct when he said to the UFT and the others that there's a teacher evaluation that has been promised but has not been agreed to. If it doesn't happen by, I think it's tomorrow night at midnight, $58 million to the city proper and I think $160 million to the state could go poof.
Would be not good if we lose that money. We certainly need it. That's what pays our teachers and principals and school crossing guards and parent coordinators and everybody in the whole system, custodians. In order to qualify for federal monies, the state passed a law saying everybody would negotiate a deal that had meaningful evaluation and a meaningful ways, if somebody didn't pass, to remove them from the classroom. And just putting them in a room and still paying them is not an answer. And so we are trying to work with the UFT. My hope is that between now and tomorrow night, New Year's is tomorrow night.
It is tomorrow night, yes.
I hadn't thought about that. Get some extra sleep tonight. We've got to do something. And if not, and we're not going to sign on to something that isn't real evaluation and real ability to upgrade the staff. We will give training to every teacher that needs training. But the bottom line is, if some aren't the quality that you want to have in front of the students, this system has to be run for the students first. And unfortunately, many government programs, not just in city, state, and federal, but all levels and all different areas, a lot of it is run for the employees in the agency that delivers the service, and not for the public that gets served. And we forget what we're trying to do. The kids are our future. You just cannot. Every year you don't fix a school system, and we have made an enormous amount of progress, but every year it doesn't get better. Another generation of kids goes out into the world without the skills they need. And the skills that you need to compete in the world that we're going into are growing faster than we are improving the school system. And we just can't do that.
You said you would if the governor gets it and the Constitution of New York has changed casino gambling in New York City, you would consider the idea.
Well, I've never been a big fan of gambling, as you know. I think it's regressive and that sort of thing. But it's certainly happening every place. If it's going to happen, we might as well get our share of the money.
That seems to be the prevailing view these days. Don't let the dollars run out of town.
Although I saw in the Post of the News today had an article about Mohegan Sun being unable to, they could go bankrupt and close.
Exactly.
Gambling is not the panacea. There's only a certain number of people that can lose all their money.
I was talking with Governor Christie about it yesterday, and he said, listen, it isn't the same thing. He said, this is not the panacea that everybody believes
right.
it to be.
It doesn't help the communities, but it does send some money to the governing body and generally the states. Governor Cuomo needs money. I'm sympathetic with that. If he gets that money, hopefully we'll get our share of it. I don't have any better alternatives for him. And if gambling is going to occur in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey and in Connecticut, you might as well have it here. If it isn't not my – preferred ways of doing it, but I'm not so sure I wouldn't have done the same thing the governor's doing. Keep in mind, it's a long time before you get this going. Yeah. You have to have the legislature this year, and then 2 years from now approve it, and then you have to have a public referendum on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you and I will be long retired.
You could say it's a crapshoot. It's a crapshoot.
Oh, I like that. That's very good. It's a crapshoot where the state takes 15 or the profits take 15%. Every time you pull that lever or throw the dice.
It's a tax.
You might as well just take the 15 cents out of your dollar and hand it over.
But then you don't have the fun of, you know, getting the fun. Anyway. Lawsuit. Wheelchair accessibility in the taxi cabs. What kind of monkey wrench does that throw into your taxi cab?
We're not sure. The deal that the governor negotiated with the legislature and with David Yasky, our commissioner for taxis and limousines, does an awful lot of what the judge said we should do. And so it may very well be that we can convince the judge that we're going in the right direction. And in fact, some of it we've gone further in some cases than what he wanted, in some cases not as far. And then there's the practical reality. You can't just overnight say to every taxi owner, you got to stop and cut your cab in half, put a section in the middle, and weld it back together. That's just not the practical. My concern is that we have real accessibility, and I still think that one of the things we just have to have is a system where if you are wheelchair-bound, you can call and have somebody show up pretty quickly at a reasonable price to take you where you want to go. Going out and hailing a cab for people in wheelchairs is hard. And, keep in mind, they can only get off the sidewalk to get out in the street to hail a cab at the corners. There's traffic there.
We had a conversation this week with some folks, and they all claim that it takes at least 10 minutes, really, to kind of get somebody, you know, the hail and then the stopping and then the hooking on the chair, the lift.
You've got conflicting things here. There is a group of people that need our help, and we have to give them the help. There's also the general public that has to be thought about. And one of the things, the taxi of tomorrow that we had picked, and who knows how we'll work out that, for example, the doors slide rather than open. You open a door out into traffic, boom,
yeah,
boom.
Not good.
It's harder to get in and out of some of these cabs. You have to have something that's reliable. One of the companies that wanted to compete for that has never made a car in their life. They were going to, in 2 years, find land in Brooklyn, build a plant, and make cars. Making cars is not easy.
Right.
It takes decades to get through all of it, literally, to get through all the approvals and know what you're doing.
All right. I know you have to run here because you got your interfaith breakfast that you've got to host. We don't want you to be too late.
Happy, merry, and whatever. I went to a Kwanzaa ceremony yesterday. I lit Hanukkah candles at the world's tallest menorah in Central Park, and the previous week at the other world's tallest menorah in Prospect Park, Grand Army Plaza. Both were great. I got an awful lot of rain when I was up there on the cherry picker, but it was fun.
Hey, listen, that's what you do when you're mayor of New York.
It's been a good year. Everybody has worked together. Not everybody, but close. And if we could have another year where the statistics keep going in the direction they were going this year, we'd have an awful lot to be thankful for. That's what we've got to look forward
to. I personally look forward to another year of Fridays.
John, it is fun. Happy New Year to all your
listeners.
Happy New
Year, sir.
It's a good one.
All right, Mr. Mayor. Happy New Year. Enjoy Lady Gaga tomorrow night. That should be an experience. 12 before 9 o'clock. We're coming right back.